Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Republic Education Call for the United States of America and our Republican form of self-governance for November 4th, 2025 at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I am Phyllis Marie, and I will start this call with a reading from Exodus 33:14, Deuteronomy 33:25, Hebrews 13:20-21, and Psalms 29:11. Walk peacefully with me through this day. You are wondering how you will cope with all that is expected of you. You must traverse this day like any other, one step at a time, instead of mentally rehearsing how you will do this or that. Keep your mind on my presence and on taking the next step. The more demanding your day, the more help you can expect from me. This is a training opportunity, since I designed you for deep dependence on your Shepherd King. Challenging times wake you up and amplify your awareness of needing my help. When you don't know what to do, wait while I open the way before you. Trust that I know what I'm doing and be ready to follow my lead. I will give strength to you, and I will bless you with peace. We, the people of the Republic, are peaceful, lawful, and private. And our declaration states, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And I want to mention that this call is for education purposes only. We don't proclaim to have all the methods or possible solutions to a given solution or situation. However, an effort is being put forth based on research that has been done in an attempt to correct the abuse. Do not come to the Q&A with the intent of causing issues with the presenter or those who make this call possible. If you do not agree with what is being presented, you have the right to hang up. Otherwise, you will be muted and not allowed to speak in the future. Okay, Daryl, I'll turn it over to you. If you're ready. He was having trouble with his computer. Let me see if he's on here yet. Okay, yeah, I need to get him opened up.
Okay.
Okay, Daryl.
Can you hear me now?
Ready. Yes, we can. Let me get mic open.
Well, welcome, everyone. I had a little trouble here. I started over a half hour ago, and I've been having a lot of trouble with this computer. I had to shut it down and try to restart it. So sorry about it if I can't get this open. But tonight there's 18 attachments, and they're all numbered 1 through 18. And Mike is... The Ombudsman Mike is going to be sharing, and we're going to go over a few of them. And if you have any questions, when we open up for questions, press *61, and you'll enter into the queue. And then when we open up for questions, Phyllis will unmute you and give your first name and state, and then go ahead and present your question. Stay on topic. Try to keep it your questions short. We don't need a big dialogue because we need to get through. We want to cover a lot of area tonight. But there's a number of them are in Word, and the other ones are in a PDF. But we're needing to, there's also some grand jury questionnaire, and we need people to be willing to step in on a grand jury, and we're going to try to get them going here before too long. It might be another month or so, but we need people to be willing to participate, and I think we can do it online, but do it on a Zoom, where we can show the documents and show the evidence, and your names will not appear. Only it'll be just the grand jury foreman. It's probably the only one that will have their name showing, but we want to keep everybody protected because we know this other side is they're pretty violent with their agenda. But we want to think that we can expect something to happen from the top and help us. But really, we've had people with reverse mortgages where they've stolen the homes. We've sent given notice to the Office of the Solicitor General, the Attorney General, Bondi, Caitlin Hamilton with Appropriations, the military, and we sent these out by email on several different cases. Have not got one response, not even one. The attorneys, the Bar Association, has continued to do what they've been doing for a long time. So it's going to be up to the people to really get involved with the grand juries, and we can present the crimes, and then we'll need to try to compel them to do their job, because they've all taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, and what these here courts have been operating as administrative courts, basically operating in violation of their oath of office, and this has to be corrected. So it's been a real uphill challenge to get them to actually do something to make a correction. But, you know, we have to, it's our duty to bring forth and to address the issues. And, you know, the results are God's, but we have to, you know, do our part in all this. But tonight we've got 18 attachments down on the bottom. And they're all numbered 1 through 18. So, Mike, when you go with the number until I get my computer finally, if it ever gets loaded here, call out the number of the document. We're going to talk about how these banks are actually holding companies, and they cannot use the U.S. courts to enforce the debt collection process. And there's several other documents that we're going to try to go over. We got the right to discharge debt. We were going to touch on this here, commercial conversion of rights into securities, and that was number 3. So we'll probably go over numbers 1, 2, 3, and 11 is a fee schedule, and 10 is basically a motion to reset the standing and the power of attorney. So, Mike, if you want to go ahead and take the floor, and it's
yes,
all yours.
I would. Okay. You know, when I thought about, you know, we're talking about doing the defense document training, one of the things is I realized that people don't really understand the level of criminality of what we're really dealing with in the courts. And I thought, you know, I put together some documents that, you know, depending on where you're at, whether you're in the middle of a court battle or whether you're fighting for your property and stuff like that, that you need to have tools that will help you and be able to have people that can reach in and help you if you run into too much difficulty. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is talk about the conversion of our rights. So let me, I believe it's number 2. Okay. And let me go put up on my screen too. Okay, commercial conversion of rights. So you get an idea of what's happening in these courts. Okay, when you go into a court, you think you're going into a constitutional court, and really what you're going into is a court that is probating your estate. Okay, and this is some of the things that happened, and then over the time we'll give you, you know, a deep understanding so that way you can approach your best way of being able to deal with it. The commercial conversion of rights into securities. Once bonded, the court's trust account using the SEDKV all caps name is activated. So that's why they put that all caps name in there. They're broadcasting right up front that you're not going into a constitutional court. They're personating you as the fiction. Okay, so they could securitize and access the securities that's in your minor account at the Treasury. A performance bond is created based on the expected outcome of the case. Does anybody want to guess what the expected outcome of the case is? Oh, you're deemed guilty. Okay. These bonds are bundled and sold on the secondary markets via the DTC, Euroclear, and others. This process monetizes your appearance and presumed guilt, provides incentive to the court to proceed to judgment. Does that sound familiar? Like Vice Admiralty Star Chambers? Right before this Revolutionary War, they used to do this stuff too, and they brought it back. This violates Canons 2057 and maximum equity, especially no man shall profit by fraud. Equity regards that which ought to be done as done. D, court officials as executors and trustees. Judges, clerks, and prosecutors do not act as impartial public servants, but as trustees or executors of a private commercial trust. They benefit from your lack of rebuttal because, hey, you don't really understand. You think you're going into a game playing baseball, and they're playing hard tackle football against you. And I mean really hard tackle football against your rights. They're acting as executor de sanctore to administer an estate to which they have hold no lawful title. Now, you hold lawful title because you're the you're the forced beneficiary of that, and you have a beneficial interest because they pledged your money, your property, and your labor to create the fiat money that we're now operating on as a credit system. This amounts to a breach of fiduciary duty, a violation of canon law, and trust law. Commercial trespass against a living man or woman. If one acts as executor without lawful authority, they assume full liability for the consequences. And this is a trust law principle. Now, what's very important to realize, you didn't ask for this fraud to be perpetrated against you. They brought you in. You think you're maybe under a ticket, or you're under some kind of thing, or somebody accused you of something, he said, she said, whatever. And the first thing you notice is, excuse me, there's no verified complaint, no sworn affidavit. So right there, you know that they're not operating common law kosher. Okay, they're operating or constitutional kosher. They're operating as a commercial process. Okay, and I'm going to introduce another document, and we'll go through some of the schemes that they do, and then we'll go into the what they're doing with the houses, and probably most of how they operate with the holding companies. So we'll get rid of this one here. And then let's see here. Let me get this other one open for you. Okay. This one is number 4, the courts move under presumption. Now this is very important to understand because they, you know, I don't know if anybody here knows about the 12 presumptions, but they operate a private bar guild business under the 12 presumptions. You're not in a constitutional court. And here are some of the things that they violate when they operate that unconstitutional ultra-virus court. This is from document number 4, courts move under presumption. We want to thank the Eden Restore Project for making these documents available to us. All governmental actors are pirates because in 1871, the Organic United States Enlegis Incorporated, okay, 28 U.S.C. 3002-15A means federal corporation and became a corporate under the law of merchant on the high seas, a.k.a. maritime jurisdiction, and has committed inland piracy upon we the people via personage, gang pressing, and barratry, who trespassed upon we the people by the tort of trespass, by tacit proclamation, means by your silence, they keep running the trespass against you because you don't know that you have to object to do not consent to their proceeding, especially since the thing how you stop this is you move towards dismissal with prejudice for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, in personam jurisdiction, and territorial jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction when they're operating by fraud. Remember that. If they had it, they lost it. You're there by special appearance testing the jurisdictional facets of it, and until they show that they have jurisdiction supported by facts, law, and evidence, they don't. Okay, and your right to demand they dismiss is your lawful and constitutionally protected right to do so. You got rights that are protected in law, and they can't pull you out and do inland piracy against you in any court. Now, okay, the birth certificates, traffic tickets, or citation summons to court buildings, permits, property tax, license plates, or any licensing of liberty are receipts of pirate property. Now, realize this, when they did the Trading with the Enemies Act, they were never supposed to use those licensing schemes against us. They were supposed to be used against enemy combatants that lived in our on our land. In 1933, they flipped the script on the Trading with the Enemies Act under the National Banking Relief Act of 1933, and now withdrew the exemption of the American people being subject to that act. That's why you see all these licensing scheme and taxation schemes, is because they now deemed us as an enemy of the state, chattel property to be resourced against. Okay, until you do what you have to do properly to rebut it. 18 U.S.C. 1660, and are pirates because pirates do whatever pirates do to make their money and confiscate their property. And the flag that you see here is an exhibit because in every courtroom, in every Congress, proving that the jurisdiction is on the high seas, a maritime jurisdiction within their political vessels, aka police cruisers, police department, sheriff's office, county jail, all court buildings, all governmental actor buildings, hospitals, fire departments, all political vessels, including each governmental actor, it's a pirate vessel. A pirate at Atlantibus Capa Libra Permanent. Things do not change their ownership when captured by pirates and robbers. Law maxim. Now, a very terrible thing happened during the Civil War, and that is they put out what was called the Liber Code. If any of you get a chance, we'll put a copy of that in the future on here, but it shows how the people who captured our country operate under laws of war. We're not supposed to be under law. We're civilians. We're supposed to have constitutional protections. How dare they war against us? But they do because they're commercial pirates. They're people who have decided that it's okay to pirate us. It's okay to violate our rights. And until we get the grand juries up and running, we won't be able to reverse this anytime real soon. But what we can do is bring up the grand juries and start removing them from positions of power, whether it's sheriff or any public official who perjures their oath. We have that power, so don't think that you're powerless. And until then, you could stand your ground. You could not consent to their schemes of piracy against you. Okay, 18 U.S.C. Code 1661, robbery ashore. Whoever being engaged in a piratical cruise or enterprise or being of a crew of any piratical vessel lands from such vessel and commits robbery on shore is a pirate and shall be in prison for life. So as a grand jury, we can imprison them for life once you prove that they're engaged in piracy, which most of them are. 18 U.S.C. 1660, receipt of pirate property. Whoever without lawful authority receives or takes into custody any vessel, goods, or other property feloniously taken by any robber or pirate against the laws of the United States, knowing the same to have been feloniously taken, shall be imprisoned for not more than 10 years. 18 U.S.C. 1659, attacks to plunder vessel. Whoever upon the high seas or the waters within the Admiralty of Maritime Jurisdiction of the United States, by surprise or open force maliciously attacks or sets up any vessel belonging to another with an inherent unlawfully to plunder the same or to despoil any owner thereof of any monies, goods, or merchandise laden on board thereof, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. So I want you to realize that inside the law, there are laws against them pirating you. Okay, but we've never been taught how they operate, how to use them, and what that means. Okay, so in the coming months, we're going to go through these in more detail because we don't have enough time to really blaze through these in detail. We've got a lot to cover tonight. But I will bring this document up on another day, and we'll go into it with more detail, because to understand the piracy that's going on against you is very important. And then what do we do about it? Okay, people feel, well, if they're pirates and they're all acting in criminal conspiracy, how do we do it? Well, we set up our administrative process against them, because they can't control our administrative process, our ability to lien them, and ability to indict them with the grand juries. And at some point, we'll be able to imprison them once our court system returns to the constitutionally compliant. Okay, so don't feel like you're without tools. You have tools. And the first thing is knowing where to set up the boundaries not to let them continue with their trespass against you. And the documents that I'm bringing here are going to start giving you your powers back, because you've lost the powers because nobody taught you what they look like. I'm going to teach you what they look like. Now, the next document I'm going to put up, Daryl, is going to be number 11, the fee schedule. Do you have that, Daryl?
My computer is still not loading.
Don't worry about it. I'll just read it off. Okay.
If anybody's online, it's number 11 on the it's a Word document. And so just open it up and you can follow.
Okay, I'm going through the short documents first, and then I'll go into a little more, and then we'll go back and we'll get through what we can get through, because we only have limited time tonight. But I'm giving you guys your power back, because when you're dealing with somebody that's really engaged in piracy in there, you put this authority for fines caused by crimes by government officers. That's their notice. Not only not to trespass, this is what you're going to be liable for. Now, other notices we'll put in the future will be notice of liability and so forth. But you have a right not to be defrauded. You have a right not to have the constitutional protections violated. You have lots of rights. Those are not privileges. Those are rights, and those rights are upheld by law. And if anything comes in conflict with that law, well, they're notwithstanding. So I'm going to go through this document that tells you what kind of penalties you can assess in your documentation against them should they fail to appeal, whether you're going to have your conditional acceptance document, or they fail to honor your debt validation document or your public servant questionnaire. Anything that they're engaging in trespass, if they have no warrants, they have no authority to go and upset your world and to invade your privacy, these are things that you could put on your documents and actually assert a administrative claim against the offenders. Remember, these guys are doing crime. If you tell them to stop and they don't stop, then they're responsible. And there's something called the AID, which is the act, intent, and damage, which means that they've committed the act, but they may have been not realizing that they're committing an act. So the AID is that you have the act, intent, and damage. It's the three essential elements that determine a crime. Okay, so let's say somebody does the act, but maybe they weren't trained, or they didn't know they were doing an act that was a harm. Because remember, these people aren't trained. So it's inherent upon us to give them grace because any one of us could make a mistake. So if it was a mistake, surprise, neglect, or inadvertence, we can forgive that, okay? And so we give them a notice to cure, okay? When they don't cure and they continue on and they're pressing to press you for money, press you for performance, okay, then that shows the intent. Their intent is not to cure. You've told them of the wrongdoing. You told them that maybe there's no law that's that they're not clothed with governmental power to assert that law, that duty for, you know, that liability that they're asserting against you for performance. Well, if it's not enacted law where I have a duty or a liability, they need to stand down. If they don't stand down, then that's when they've done the damage because you've given them an opportunity to cure, and then that's when you start the three-step process to be able to assert a liability and damages and liens and whatever other tools you need to do to bring them to stop and bring them to justice or bring them before a grand jury to get them removed from office. They can't hold that office in bad behavior. Remember what the Declaration of Independence says, okay, that we reserve the right, okay, to amend or abolish or remove for bad behavior, okay? And this is what's happening is that when they say bad behavior, it's not, oh, smack on the hand, oh, you're a bad boy. No, it's felony bad behavior because they're doing it with the force of a badge. They're doing it under color of authority. Okay, they know better. They know not to trespass. They know in common law, okay, it's do no harm. Okay, so if you're telling them they're doing harm and they're doing harm without proper lawful sanction, I mean, sometimes they do harm because it's lawfully sanctioned to stop you doing a crime, okay? And if they're operating under proper sanction, well, you know, you better heed them, okay? But if they're not, and that's why it's very important to give these guys respect because sometimes you're going to run into officers who are trying to uphold the real law. So don't paint every one of them with the same brush. Everyone, you test everyone the fruit of their walk, if they're walking straight or if they're walking crooked. If they're walking crooked, you give them a couple opportunities to change course. If they don't, then they deserve the penalties they're going to get. Okay, so these damages, authority for fines and damages caused by crimes of government officers, applicable to authorizing bodies, captains, chiefs, supervisors, employers, agents, clerks, and administrators. These damages charged per count in part were determined by the government itself for the violations listed thereof. Okay, breach, violation of oath of office, it's a felony, it's $250,000, that's a constitutional violation. The authority is 18 U.S.C. 3571, 28 U.S.C. 3002-15. Abuse, armed abuse of office, $200,000. Armed abuse of authority, $200,000. Armed use of emergency lighting in a non-emergency situation, $200,000. Armed use of emergency siren in a non-emergency, $200,000. Armed assault and battery, $200,000. Armed threat of violence, $200,000. Armed coercion, $200,000. Denied proper warrants, $250,000. That's a constitutional violation. Every time you see that $250,000, that's a constitutional violation. Okay, 18 U.S.C. 3571 backs that up. Denied right of reasonable defense arguments. That's due process and discovery. $250,000. That's a felony violation. This is not a mamby-pamby violation. Defense evidence records. $250,000. Again, a constitutional violation. 18 U.S.C. 3571. Denied right to truth and evidence. This is a biggie right here. $250,000. 18 U.S.C. 3571. And what this means, I got to really be very specific. When you put an affidavit and they don't rebut that, they're denying the right to truth coming into the evidence record. okay? Because when you put you're putting your testimony of truth in there, they have to rebut it or it stands. If they ignore it, they're constitutionally violating you. Unconstitutionally violating, I should say. On violation of due process, 200,000. Slavery, forced compliance to contracts not held, 250,000. That's impairment of the obligation of a contract. That's a constitutional violation. Denied provisions of the Constitution. All of those are felony violations of the Bill of Rights, 250,000. Armed treason or war against Americans, 250,000. Violation of constitutional rights for insurrection. Genocide against humanity, $1 million, 18 U.S.C. 1091. That one has an uptick on the price. Apartheid, $1 million. Armed deprivation of rights under color of authority, 200,000. That's the 18 U.S.C. 242. Emotional distress, 200,000. Okay, 32 CFR. 536.7783. Mental anguish and abuse, 200,000. 42 CFR 488.301. So somebody goes in there and they're intentionally abusing you, torturing you mentally. That's actionable as a crime. Peonage, this is a felony. $200,000, and that's under 1581 and 42 U.S.C. 1994. If you're not free to leave, they better make sure that they have a right to hold you, otherwise they're engaging in peonage. Next. Okay, I hope this is helping everybody. Unlawful incarceration, $200,000. See, when you know, okay, that this is a laundry list, menu of how much it's going to cost them if they engage in intentional harms, vexatious litigation against you when they know you did nothing wrong or you're innocent of a crime. Next, malicious prosecution, $200,000. This means that they're prosecuting you and they're maliciously prosecuting you when they know that you're innocent and they're denying due process, they're denying Brady, they're denying all of these things, and they're doing it anyways. Deprivation of character. This is a big one here. If somebody slanders you when you're in the middle of a court case, that's defamation of character. They have no right to say whether you're guilty or innocent or go to the press or put any press release. That's $200,000. Slander, $200,000. When they ruin your good name, you can't make a living. Libel, same thing when they print it into the newspaper, $200,000. Armed trespassing, $200,000. Neglect, Failure to Protect Act. Okay, this is under 18 U.S.C. 1621, 42 U.S.C. 1986. Other officers, if they neglect to protect you, when they see these guys are going off into the weeds and causing a crime against you, they're just as guilty for their failure to protect, their neglect and failure to protect you. They have a duty to protect you when they see these guys are off in the weeds doing that. Armed gang pressing, $200,000. Armed land piracy plunder, $200,000. Unauthorized bond production, $200,000. Armed forgery, $200,000. Armed embezzlement, $200,000. Armed stalking, $200,000. Armed impersonating a public official. Remember, they're impersonating a public official if they cannot produce an oath and bond, if they are operating under color of law, they're impersonating a public official. You slap a $200,000 fine on each one of them. If they're acting as agents of foreign principals, we're going to talk about foreign holding companies used in the courts illegally, and they're aided by foreign mercenaries that are operating in the court under the bar, $200,000. Armed torture, $200,000. Armed operating statutes without a bond, $200,000. Exploitation of a legal justice minority group by bar close union shop courts rights, $1 million. They violate you as a minority with the bar. It's $1 million when your civil rights gets violated. Bar violation of antitrust laws, $200,000. Remember, antitrust is monopoly laws. Misappropriation of taxpayer funds, $200,000. Violation of Universal Declaration of Rights, Human Rights, armed breach of trust, $200,000. Again, 18 U.S.C. 641 to 664. Okay, armed disturbing the peace, $200,000. Armed kidnapping, $200,000. Armed misfeasance, malfeasance, malpractice, $200,000. Armed misrepresentation and peonage, $200,000. Misprison of the felony, $500 if it's just a misprison. Armed conspiracy against rights of the people, $200,000. Armed criminal extortion, economic oppression, $200,000. And there's all kinds of ways they do these things. Okay, so this gives you a lot of latitude to be able to define their crime. And this is found in their statutes. This is the charges that that you could wage against them. And it's in their law books. Okay, armed extortion of rights, $200,000, Title 15. Armed robbery, $200,000. Armed theft by forced registration, $200,000. Let me tell you something. We have a friend of ours, okay, they pulled her over and they robbed her. They stole her the gold jewelry in her car before they seized her car. They actually robbed her house when she was in prison. The only people that knew that she was in jail was the police officers, and they had people break into her house and steal hundreds of thousands of dollars. So don't think that they don't do armed robbery. They do. Mail threats, $5,000. If they throw threats in the mail, they're not allowed to. It's against federal law for them to do so. 18 U.S.C. 876, 18 U.S.C. 1341. Okay, schemes and artifice to fraud. Armed to fraud, $10,000. 18 U.S.C. 1001. Armed violation of the Libor Code against noncombatants, $200,000. Armed wrongful assumption of status and standing, $200,000. I want to go a little bit into the Libor Code. While they're operating what's called martial rule, they're not allowed to violate you with armed force. That's a violation of the third convention of the Geneva Convention, where you're not allowed to be treated as an enemy combatant because you're a civilian. Okay, so just keep note of that. Armed wrongful assumption of status, standing, $200,000. Armed falsification of documents and record, $10,000. Armed fictitious obligations, $200,000. Armed perjury, $2,000. Armed subordination of perjury, $2,000. Armed racketeering, criminal felony, we're talking RICO guys, $200,000. That's 18 U.S.C. 1961 through 1968. Armed racketeering civil, $200,000. Wages taken, triple sustained damages. That's triple damages under 18 U.S.C. 1964C. So if they went and seized your money under a notice of false tax notice that's not backed by a lawful court order warrant, they just became owed you for treble damages, and they might owe you for restraint of trade damages, depending on the severity of what they did. If they got others to do it, that's a RICO, which usually they do. They'll give a notice to somebody that those people, let's say an employer will take your money and they don't have a court order, that's a RICO because it's more than two people. It's three people engaged in doing that, and they're using the mails to do it. Debtors are responsible for any IRS obligation resulting from the discharge of cancellation of any debts, as well as earned income resulting from accepted settlements. Immunity is invalid as validity would violate U.S. Constitution Section 2, 4, 18 U.S.C., 241, 42 U.S.C., 1983, 42 U.S.C., 1985, 42 U.S.C., 1986, which is the prevent one, the state constitutions. The listed law is authorized to mandate removal from public office. So when they violate these things, grand jury can convene and have them removed from office. Violations of law are legally unassailable due to precedent. Violations of law established by court case, Such situations violate numerous specifically stated intents. The purpose of the Constitution is set forth in the preamble, applicable to anyone in any branch of government. So anyways, I wanted to let you guys know that these are the fees that you could give them in your letter when you tell them to, you'd be better stop and cure. This is what you're going to be liable for, and you could take that and go get a judgment and make them liable for that amount of money. And this is denoted in dollars, but you could denote it in silver and gold because we operate with lawful money too. It could be and or functional currency equivalent. So you can take fiat money, but it's going to be the equivalent of what the lawful money is. So we convert that into lawful money when we assert the penalty. And then we say, or it's functional credit equivalent. So whatever 250,000 ounces of silver is in functional credit currency, functional currency is, that's what that would switch up. So if it's you have $50 to $1 of silver, then it'd be 50 times that. So that could multiply real quick against these people. Anyways, I'm going to go into, let's see here, the bank holding information. This one is probably, I found this little goodie a couple of weeks ago as I was in my research lab. And
that's
this is probably
one.
That's document number one, the holding company. This is probably one of the most, and probably the most important tools. And I'm still looking at the different ways to apply it. Okay, it could go apply in credit card cases. It could apply against those trying to foreclose on your home. It could apply to tax cases. Anywhere where there's a bank behind it asserting. Whether it's to try to get you imprisoned or take your property and so forth, they never had the permission to use our courts the way that they're using them, guys. So hold on a second. Let me take a sip here. So hold on to your hat. I got this document here. It's absolute dynamite. Okay. Subject, dealing with the holding companies. There's no jurisdiction, no investment in private residential real estate in the United States, 12 CFR 1500, no deposit taking from American citizens, 12 USC 378, 12 USC 1862, and 12 USC 3102, no foreclosure of private residential real estate in the United States, 12 CFR 225.28, no liens on real estate in the United States, 12 CFR 211.4. No banking in the United States, public law 89-485, section 3. I'll give you a little background. When the Federal Reserve Act came in, they knew they were going to be going to a credit system, and they wanted to make sure that people's constitutionally protected rights were protected against them, you know, people who are using these credit instruments to just take without due process and law. Okay, so they put the brakes on foreign financial holding institutions that have lots of financial power coming in and asserting, you know, debtors' prison against us or taking our property without due process. Okay, so they put these laws in place to protect us, but they never really broadcast it to us. No real estate loans in the United States, public law, 89.485, section 6H, 12 USC 29, 12 USC 375 being no branching in the United States, 12 USC, and what they mean by no branching, after 1933, our state banks were all run out of business by the implementation of the New Deal, where they switched out our lawful money and put in their credit notes, okay? And by doing so, they're only extending credit, and they have certain rules about what they had to do to be able to extend credit, and it means that they had to fully fund it in cash, which none of them ever do. They do it. They take our promissory note, and they lend the credit back to us. So it's a total fraud. There's what's called a failure consideration. So they put these things in place, and they didn't broadcast and tell us about these. no branch in the United States. That is that the holding companies, these foreign holding companies, acting through their United States proxies, they're not allowed to operate and operate banking in the United States because of their foreign ties. They're not really licensed to do banking business here. They're not supposed to. They're a foreign holding company. 15 U.S.C. 36 extension of credit has to be secured by a collateral deposit of 100% cash. Has anybody here gotten a loan that they knew that was secured by 100% cash? I can't say that any of you probably have. Okay, 12 U.S.C. 215, no home loans to individual HOLA of 1933, no securities or hedge fund investments in the United States. 12 U.S.C. 1850, no credit intermediaries in the United States. And that's what those banks are, they're credit intermediaries. They're not even banks. They're a subsidiary of the holding company. Like, for instance, I discovered that American Express has a holding company in London, and what they have here that's lending out these credit cards is a subsidiary, okay, or intermediary. 12 U.S.C. 225.28, no bank holding companies in the United States, 12 U.S.C. 1843. See, these guys are not subject to our banking regulations and rules, and they intentionally use usury, playing with the LIBOR rates of the things. So they basically manipulate the market through their operations to be able to get people into debt and take away their property. And the people who set this up understood that and put laws against it, but the laws, because the bar monopoly has been running our courts for so long, they ignore these laws that are in place until you bring them up. No savings and loan associates in the United States, 12 CFR 225.28. Remember, all the savings and loans went bye-bye 20 years ago. No student loans from an industrial loan company, Sallie Mae. 12 CFR 225.28, no housing loans in the United States. 12 U.S.C. 1432B, no evictions from private residential real property in the United States under HUD. The real party of interest is the Bank of International Settlement. A Rothschild-owned 12 U.S.C. 3105, 12 CFR Part 1500, Merchant Banking Investments Authority 12 U.S.C. 1843K. Basically, that's a military banking institution designed to do inland piracy against us. They try to put strict laws that they can't use our courts to use them as a place to defraud us, but because the bar is running our courts now, they ignore those laws. Whoever without such authority makes, draws, issues, puts forth, or assigns any certificate, deposit, draft, order, bill exchange, acceptance note, debenture, bond or other obligation or mortgage, judgment, or decree. Okay, questions. So are all mortgages unlawful? The answer is no. Question, would a judge's judgment or decree enforcing a mortgage or a mortgage foreclosure always be unlawful? The answer is yes. Anyone puzzled? Well, the answer is actually found in 12 U.S.C. 503. A mortgage loan of credit is permitted provided the borrower is a member bank officer. Do you guys remember becoming a member bank officer when you went to go buy your house? I don't think any of you remember that. Okay, there could never be any enforcing of a mortgage or a mortgage foreclosure for two reasons. Member bank officer directors are not permitted to conduct business in the several states. Number one, 12 U.S.C. 615, 12 U.S.C. 211, 12 CFR 28, 12 CFR 347, 105, Public Law 89, 485, Section 3, 12 U.S.C. 1843. Member bank officers, directors, transactions have to be secured by a collateral deposit of 100% in cash, cited in Section 23 of the Federal Reserve Act of 1933. Amendment to Section 22 of the said Act, 12 U.S.C. 375A, source, 12 U.S.C. 503, liability of directors, officers of member banks. Okay. If directors, officers of any member bank shall knowingly violate or permit any of the agents, officers, or directors of any member bank to violate any provision of Section 375, 375A, 375B, 376 of this title or regulations on board made under authority of or any provision of Section 217, 218, 219, 220, 655, 1005, 1014, 1906, 1909 of Title 18, every director, officer participating in or asserting to such violations shall be held liable in his personal and individual capacity for all damages which the member banks, its shareholders, or any other person shall have sustained in consequence of such violation. Wouldn't it be nice to know that the courts that you're really operating in this country are all part of the IMF or the Bank of International Settlements, which are foreign holding companies directing these people to go extract from us, which they're not allowed to use our courts to do so? Because basically all those courts are debt collector courts, all probating your estate, your trust estate. 12 U.S.C. 375A, loans to executive officers of banks. No executive officer or any member bank may become indebted to that member bank except by means of an extension of credit which the bank is authorized to make under this section. Mortgage loan. The member bank may make a loan to any executive officer of the bank if at the time the loan is made. B, it is secured by a first lien on the dwelling which is expected after the making of the loan to be owned by an officer and used by him as a residence. See, so they take care of their own with giving their own people resident houses, okay, besides other booty that they give them. Would you prefer, okay, this is, would you prefer a lower down payment or a higher mortgage cost or a bigger down payment with a lower mortgage cost? If the question is for mortgages in the United States, such provision does not exist in Title 12. USC banking. Traditionally, a mortgage loan was through a state-controlled bank. They no longer exist. Congress taxed them out of business. All that's left is chartered foreign corporations masquerading as banks, not permitted to conduct business in the United States. Additionally, the controller of currency lists the authority for real estate loans as 12 USC 371 in 1966. Congress enacted the Bank Holding Act, Public Law 89485. There are a few sections to review here. In Section 3 of the Act, Congress stated that the Federal Reserve Act of 12 U.S.C. 601 through 631 did not create a national banking system, and none of them are permitted to conduct business in the United States. Isn't that beautiful? These guys are conducting business, and nobody knew that they're not supposed to be conducting business here. Especially if they were to conduct any kind of court thing, they would have to go to the Court of International Trade, which is an Article III court. Section 23 of the Federal Reserve Act is restricted to extension of credit to member bank affiliate secured by a cash collateral deposit of 100% of the credit extended. So we have an either-or proposition. Contract does not exist, which it doesn't, or it has been secured by a cash deposit of 100%. Drafted a letter for a foreclosure in Florida. The controller informed the judge to set off the mandatory collateral deposit, and the case went away. So these, when you bring this up in the proper way, the case has to go away because it's a failure of consideration. Why does GAAP require accrual accounting? GAAP is an abbreviation for General Accepted Accounting Principles utilized by the Bank for International Settlement, the Rothschild-owned bank. It's required by branches of foreign banks making foreign loans. Part of the reporting requirement are two forms. And this is what you ask for in your debt validation, so pay attention, guys. FAS 34 and FAS 35, capitalization of interest cost for all international loans. There are no banks in the United States. So what are they doing here, and why are they doing a foreclosure on your house? You should still pay off the full balance of your credit card to avoid finance charges, or should you hold on to your cash until the pandemic is over? The credit is not real money. as in the sense of anything of real value, like in money. It's merely a bookkeeping, as a bookkeeping entry or ghost money. In the congressional debates leading up to the passage of the Federal Reserve Act 1913, the congressional vote prohibited the use of credit as a medium of exchange. So is there a provision in the FRA for use of credit? Well, the answer is yes, and it's in Section 23 of the Act. Restricted to member bank transactions, it's online. The provision permits the extension of credit provided the counterparty to of the transaction deposit a collateral deposit of 100% in cash, a prepaid contract. I've used that provision for any attempt to collect on any credit card or mortgage loan with the same results. A result for a set-off, the case is always closed. Is Bank of America part of Citigroup? Well, in some respects, but not directly. Citigroup is domiciled in Ireland. They have a subsidiary, Citibank. Their only similarities are both are EDGE Act corporations, not legally permitted to conduct business in the United States here. 12 CFR 250.143, member bank purchase of stock, foreign operations subsidiaries. In 1919, the enactment of Section 25A of the Federal Reserve Act, the EDGE Act permitted national banks to invest in federally chartered international or foreign bank corporations, so-called EDGE corporations, which may engage in international foreign banking or other international or foreign financial operations, or banking or other financial operations in the dependency or insular possessions of the United States, either directly or through the ownership or control of local institutions in foreign countries, or dependencies and insular possessions. So who is the transfer agent for Wells Fargo Bank? Or in any case, whatever bank you're dealing with, could be B of A, it could be Chase. Okay, who is their transfer agent? Probably the resident agent or whatever. Wells Fargo is owned by the Warburg banking family of Germany. It is not a bank. Wells Fargo is a bank holding company, restricted to financing exports and not permitted to contract with the general public. Any contract with Wells Fargo is void and subject to banking fraud charges, 18 U.S.C. 1005. Now, I'm going to make another document that's a little more lengthy document. I think it's an 18-page document that goes into the full heart of the bank fraud, so that if you're dealing with somebody who's not going to give you validation, they're not going to let you go to settlement on it, you hit them with, I'm going to sue you for bank fraud, and you'll get their attention. With that, Daryl, do you want to open it up for Q&A at this point? Or do you want to go into one more document? We can go into one more document. That's what the fee schedule is if they steal your bills in exchange. Or do you want to cover that another day?
Yeah. Well, I'm not able to open and show any documents. I'm having a lot of trouble with this computer.
Okay.
But if Phyllis, do you have many questions in the Q&A?
Not at the moment.
Okay, yeah, go ahead with another document then, Mike. Which one do you want to go on?
Okay, the next one we're going to go on, okay, is, let me say this one for future day. We're not going to go into any more of that one
number
tonight.
Number 10? Did you cover number 10?
No, I didn't cover number 10. Do you want me to cover number 10?
We can be our attorney, that's an important document.
It's incredibly, you know what? It's probably even more important than when they're stealing your bills of exchange. This is probably more important, so I'll go into that one. Let me go open that one up. That one's a very important document, so let me what was the name of that document here? Hold on a second.
Reassert standing. That's a power of attorney.
Yes, yes, that's incredibly powerful. Let's see if I can find it. Okay, this is number 10. Just give me a second. It'll take me a second to open it. Okay, and let's see. Let me print this. Give me a second, guys. I'm going to print this out because I like reading off of my printed paper versus the off the computer screen here. I'll give you a little background on this while this is printing out for us. Okay. When you go into court and they're trying to force a bar attorney on you, or you're trying to assert your due process protections, you're trying to assert the constitutional protections, you're trying to assert these things, which you have a right to assert, okay? You have a right not to be defrauded, okay? And sometimes you might need a help because they gang up on you in these courts. So what you could do, and this is very powerful, this guy out of South Dakota wrote up this document, and it's an absolute beautiful document. That's why I gave it to you. Turn it into a Word document and use it in your court documents wherever you need to apply some of the principles, okay? This is incredibly powerful. I'm just going to call him Smith for now. There's Tyler J. in there because I don't know if I have the right to use that, so we'll just call him Smith. The living man, state citizen, surgeons, and I'll call one John Smith and I'll call the other one Michael Smith. So that way we're not using their names on there. Hold on a second. Okay. So we'll call him John Smith and Michael Smith. I didn't get a chance to sanitize this guy, sorry, but this was so valuable and important I had to get it out to you. Okay, this makes all the difference. Okay, so wherever you see Taylor J, we're going to call him John Smith, and wherever you see Aaron Prince, we're going to call him Michael Smith, okay? Okay, so John Smith, a living man, state citizen, sui juris, and Michael Smith, by special appearance by state citizen under constitutional authority to enforce and lawful commissions acting under doctrine of private attorney general, guardian of the public interest, and protector of due process claimants versus all their personal and private official capacities respondents. Motion to reassert the hold a second. This one is John. And this one is Michael. Okay. Motion to reassert standing jurisdiction under power of attorney and private prosecutor status. Comes now Michael, a man appearing in proper person and as appointed lawful agent of private prosecutor John, moves this honorable court to reassert and acknowledge lawful standing jurisdiction under the following facts and authority. Power of attorney granted. Lawful agency has been established. I acknowledge the principal, John, we'll just call him John, and the undersigned, Michael, by duly executed and irrevocable power of attorney, lawfully noticed on the record. Non-attorney agency does not invalidate standing. I think this is very important to remember this, so you're dealing with standing in these courts. Under common law, a man may appoint another to act as his agent in all civil, and commercial affairs, including legal filings, arbitration offers, and assertion of rights. The denial of this relationship would constitute a denial of fundamental right to contract and to access redress. Rule 17A, compliance and lawful status. The undersigned appears not as a bar membered attorney, but as a private prosecutor under natural and common law, empowered to assist, represent, and prosecute claims where state or private actors violate the unalienable rights of a living man and rightful heir. Okay. The right to petition redress cannot be obstructed by licensing statutes. The right to petition for redress of grievance, U.S. Constitution Amendment 1, and the right to access the courts for remedy of injury, U.S. Constitution Amendment 7 and 9, are not contingent upon state-issue licenses, especially when claims involve constitutional equity and trust law violations. Private prosecutor status recognized in equity and commercial trust breach, where corporate actors, including public officers, commit ultra-violent acts, fraud, or abuse of trust, the harmed party may assist agency in prosecution rights to a private representative. The undersigned appears in capacity evidence by notice filed and rebutted proof declaration already in the record. Jurisdiction cannot be denied by fictitional barriers. The court is now on notice that the denial of undersigned's agency role would constitute a constructive denial of remedy, obstruction of due process, and trespass upon unalienable rights of both the principal and the agent under color of law. Do you guys get this? This is boom chakalaka powerful for you. If you need to have somebody help you to navigate the court's fraud, okay, you get them in, give them power of attorney and have them come in as your agent. That way you're not being ganged up on anymore. Insufficiency service claim is misapplied. The defendants argue that the response to the motion to dismiss is procedurally invalid due to Michael not being an attorney and John, okay, not having personally signed. However, such procedural arguments are insufficient to overcome lawful agency duly noticed under power of attorney. The undersigned does not proceed as a legal representative, but as an assigned agent in fact, a role recognized in trust law, contract law, and international commercial practice. Power of attorney supersedes technical pleading formalities. A valid and properly executed power of attorney, unrebutted and lawfully on the record, cannot be summarily ignored by the court under a statutory rule designed for members of the private bar association. Such rules may govern licensed practitioners, but do not bind private agency when duly noticed and unchallenged. Equity courts must look to substance over form. As an equitable matter, where fraud, abuse of power, and jurisdictional usurpation are alleged, the court must elevate the substance of a pleading over its form. In this case, the filing of the objection, affidavit, and conditional offer of arbitration was a lawful notice and response under both commercial and constitutional standards, regardless of formal bar membership. Bar-only representation limits are statutory, not constitutional. Okay, in this case, South Dakota statute cited by defendants are administrative codes regulating commercial bar membership. They do not override the constitutional, contractual, and fiduciary basis upon which this motion is brought. I would call it, instead of motion, I call it petition. These statutes cannot lawfully deprive a man of his right to assign agency or address redress outside of a commercial bar monopoly. Equity trust violations, an inherent right to rebut fiduciary malfeasance. Hold on, this is getting good, guys. Read a little more of this and you'll see how good this is. This is a boom chakalaka document. Presumption of trust and fiduciary oversight. The judiciary bar and associate agents named in this have engaged in administration of the estate trust of the living man, John. Okay. John. Without full disclosure, consent of proper delegation. Under the rules of equity and trust law, any such administration must be accountable to the named beneficiary and lawful agents. Canon law and equity require a remedy. As recognized under Canon 2057, the maximum equity silence in the face of lawful objection is acquiescence. When a living man places the court and officers on notice of rebuttal of presumption of incompetence, wardship, or legal fiction status, a remedy must be afforded. Failure to do so constitute ecclesiastical trespass and constructive fraud. Commercial agency and power of attorney doctrine. The court is engaging with parties whose legal existence is based on constructive trust and corporate franchises, state of South Dakota, U.S., etc. In such commercial forms, a private man may assign an agent via power of attorney and engage in lawful representation of interest, dismissing filings on procedural pretext, denies access to redress, and commits a tort against the principal. Court's duty to inquire. When confronted with a challenge to jurisdiction, particularly in matters involving fundamental rights and equity, the court has a duty to inquire, not to summarily dismiss. A blanket rejection of filings under the guise of unauthorized practice fails to address the lawful standing, factual notice, and equity claims made by Michael under power of agency and fiduciary appointment. Relief request and condition for continued jurisdiction. Recognition of standing under power of attorney and lawful authority. The court is requested to formally acknowledge the standing of Michael as lawful agent and private prosecutor for the living man, John, based on durable and unrevoked power of attorney. This includes the right to file, speak, and defend rights on behalf of the principal within the limits of equity, trust law, and organic constitution of the United States. Judicial notice and challenge to administrative presumption. The court must take judicial notice that this case invokes fundamental rights secured by Articles 4, 5, and 6, and 10 of the U.S. Constitution, and that presumptions of corporate wardship, incapacity, or statutory subjugation have been lawfully rebutted by the claimants. Therefore, denial of standing based on private bar regulations constitutes both due process and First Amendment violations. Rebuttal of ultra-virus jurisdiction. The court is placed on notice that all administrative acts executed without express constitutional and equity-based jurisdiction are ultra-virus, and any attempt to obstruct lawful agency or suppress revenue constitutes commercial injury and breach of trust and judicial misconduct. Request for affirmative ruling or certified question. In light of the above, claimants respectfully request a written ruling affirming the right of Michael to represent John under power of attorney and equity jurisdiction, or in the alternative, a certified question to a higher court, Article III tribunal, for constitutional review of these matters. Remember, what you want to do is you want to force this into a quorum novus, writ of error, because that's what's happening here. Okay. Reservation of rights. All rights are expressly reserved under UCC 1-308 and 1-103, the Declaration of Independence and the Organic Articles of Confederation and Constitution. This petition, I'm going to call it petition instead of motion, does not waive any right, standing, or claim of the living man or his authorized fiduciary. Structural legal appendix. Foundational authority and judicial oversight is Marbury versus Massive. The holding established judicial review, laws repugnant to the Constitution are void. Cooper versus Aaron, holding no state official law may override constitutional protections. Rodriguez versus Ray Donovan, holding conversion of individual rights into corporate obligations violates due process. Limits on judicial and administrative power. Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Limits on judicial administrative power. Pearson versus Ray. Judges lose immunity when acting outside of lawful jurisdiction or engaging in misconduct. Turmey versus Ohio. 373 U.S. 510, 1920. These are Supreme Court cases, guys. Judges with pecuniary interests and outcomes violate due process. I don't think, okay, Pearson versus Ray, I didn't give the Supreme Court site. It was 386 U.S. 547, 1967. Okay, well, that was judges lose immunity when acting outside lawful jurisdiction or engaging in misconduct. Okay, Ward versus Village of Monroeville. 409 U.S. 57, 1972. Financial interest in cases undermines judicial impartiality. This is a very important one, guys. If they have a financial interest, whether it's through the CRISP, through the CRISP actions, or through financial holding companies where they're getting a pension, they're getting kickback, or they have some financial interest, guess what? It undermines judicial impartiality. It forfeits subject matter jurisdiction. That's how important that is. That's in a very important case. United States versus Bishop, 412 U.S. 346, 1973, reinforces constitutional due process in enforcement and penalties. Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham, 394 U.S. 147, 1969, invalidates licensing schemes used to suppress constitutional rights. Do you guys realize how important that is? I want you to keep these Supreme Court cases handy when you're dealing with circumventing your constitutionally protected rights. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania, 319 U.S. 105, 1943. No license may be required to exercise a fundamental right. These cases have never been overturned. They're shepherded and they're good right now in 2025. They've never been overturned. So just keep that in mind if you have to use them as controlling law. Okay. Chevron access and administrative overreach. Okay. Chevron USA versus NRDC, 467 U.S. 837, 1984. Holding courts must defer to administrative agency interpretations of ambiguous statutes, provided Congress has not spoken directly. Criticism. This deference enables agencies, including state and municipal actors, to expand authority beyond constitutional limits, reducing judicial scrutiny and eroding the separation of powers. Axis of expansion, post-Chevron abuse. Administrative bodies, including the Bar Association, courts, acting administrator, and executive agency, have used the Chevron to impose binding interpretations in absence of legislative. Remember, there's no government authority if there's no legislation. Criminalize non-statutory violations. Circumvent fundamental rights via code enforcement. Conceal ultra-virus behavior behind the shield of rulemaking authority. Okay, West Virginia, EPA 597 U.S. 2022. Holding major questions doctrine. Reaffirm agencies cannot make decisions of vast economic and political significance without clear constitutional mandate. Application Chevron deference is limited. Agency discretion will now face heightened scrutiny when rights or significant burdens are at stake. Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo, number 22451, 2024 decision. Overruled Chevron. Courts must now independently interpret statutes that cannot defer to agency interpretations by default. Significance, the judiciary reclaims interpretive authority. This ends the Chevron axis and restores constitutional boundaries. Application to this case, Bar Association courts cannot rely on administrative policy to override natural law, constitutional protections, or equity claims. Licensing statute and UPL, unauthorized practice of law codes, are administrative tools that cannot be used to suppress lawful private agency under power of attorney or fiduciary standing. Number four, Bar Association federal scrutiny. Goldfarb versus Virginia State Bar, 421 U.S. 773, 1975, holding. Bar associations are subject to federal antitrust laws and not immune from scrutiny. There's no immunity, guys. Okay, punitive damages and remedy. BMW of North America versus Gore, 517 U.S. 559, 1996. State Farm versus Campbell, 538 U.S. 403, 2003. Exxon Shipping versus Baker, 554 U.S. 471, 2008. Trevisant versus City of Tampa, 741 of F2D, 336, 11th Circuit. All affirm punitive damages for egregious misconduct and abuse of power. Maximum of law and equity. Fraud, standing, and authority. Okay, and I'm not going to read the Fraudos Omina corrupt pit. Fraud corrupts everything. I'm just going to read the Ex Doro Malo Non Orator Actu No action arises from deceit. It's very important. You've got to put these in. I use the English one. Noris quorum capi protestant in juris sua propria. No one can benefit from their own wrong. And then false in one is false in all. Suppression of truth is equivalent to falsehood. That's fraud standing authority. Constitutional sovereign equity. Where there is a right, there is a remedy. Ignorance of the law excuses no one. Equity follows the law. Let justice be done, though the heavens fall. An unjust law is no law at all. Sovereign power and oversight. The welfare of the people is supreme law. Who will guard the guards themselves? Those who consent and those who act are equally liable. So with that, I'll call that a day here for the document because we're getting kind of late. But if anybody would like to discuss any of these further, I'm open. So
we have one question, one
sure.
person in the queue. Well, now we have two.
Okay.
We'll go with James in Pennsylvania first.
Sure.
Go ahead, James.
Well, good day, guys. I put the Libra code in the in the messages. And how you doing, Mike? Hey, that was a great presentment tonight, and I appreciate it. I got
is that from Chakalaka, that document? I want you guys to use it. I promise you guys use your stuff.
Okay. I didn't do that. No, that's fine. I put the Libra code in the chat for everybody.
Okay.
But I see you're doing these forms, and I like to talk more later about it. But I just want to tell you this is a great presentment, and I appreciate what you're doing. And you're talking about the 1099s and stuff, correct? As well.
Well, I'll share with you about 1099s. I know people use them. I'm aware of it. But I like to stay away from IRS forms because sometimes if you make a little mistake on it, they can hammer you hard on that. And if they need to have their forms filled out, I'd rather them fill it out instead of me. So that's where I take. I use the stuff that's lawful for us to use. And if they need to do the paperwork, they could do it themselves. That's where I stand about it.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm starting to think now when I read some of these forms that you mentioned in part of your presentation, I noticed that they have like persons in there and persons of corporation and stuff. And I'm starting to see that I'll just talk to you about it later. I'm not going to take up. There's somebody else who's got a question. I'll let this go.
I
appreciate it.
You're a very good student, and I'm going to make sure we bring you the very best so that they stop harassing you and trespassing against you. You won't be ignorant of your rights anymore. And I'm going to make sure everybody that's listening, I want to give you guys your power back. So I got a lot of documents I'm going to kind of drip feed you over the next several weeks. And those documents are designed to plug the holes of what they didn't teach you about offering your rights and your protections in law. And I want you to take it. Make sure they're in documents that you can cut and paste, and I want you to use it because the guys who gave us this stuff suffered hard to get us this information. Okay? We're standing on the shoulders of giant guys.
Mike, you're really
good. Is that better? Am I echoing?
Yeah, you're echoing.
I don't know why I'm echoing. That just happened. Okay.
Yeah. Do you have?
Does it help a little bit? I took it off speaker for that reason.
Yeah, if you've got speakers on as well as your phone, sometimes they interfere with each other.
Do I sound better now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate putting this thing up to my ear, man. I'm getting fricasseed here, but that's okay. I'll put up with it.
Okay.
Well, no, I'm done. I could have had my mic on. I apologize about that. I yield. It's off.
Okay. Thanks, James. We'll I'll catch up with you
the next
another
couple of days.
Okay, there's another question from Kent. Keep
okay.
it on the subject matter, if you will, please.
Yes, good evening.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you for the presentation, Mike. I appreciate that. We said a couple of weeks ago that we should offer constructive comments on documents as to how they might be improved. So I want to ask you a question. So in the last document from the gentleman in South Dakota, you particularly mentioned, and correct me if I'm wrong, malfeasance, and did not mention misfeasance or nonfeasance. Now, I realize it's not your document, but do you think it would be better if we had all three of those in there, or do you think it's the intent not to mention, for example, nonfeasance, because we don't want to talk about, for some particular reason, an act that they omitted to do?
If you bring it up, you have to assert it. So, you know, you want to try to keep it narrow what you're asserting, okay? Because otherwise, that leaves too much room for them to take you off task.
Okay, so are you suggesting that you would not want to mention misfeasance and nonfeasance in addition to malfeasance?
I think you could offer it in there if it strengthens what you want to do. If it's not going to add much strength to it, it's like this. You don't want to hit them with a blunt instrument. You'd rather hit them with a surgical scalpel, because this is designed to do certain things, and you want those to accomplish those certain things for you.
Okay, so in short, are you suggesting that we, unless it suits our purposes or there's something unique about what we're using the document for, are you suggesting that the omission of the act would be harder to prove or to bring evidence forth, and it's better just to stick with malfeasance, which is a wrongful act that you can show was committed by them?
Right. You want to keep it simple for you, because remember, every time you go into something that's a little more advanced, it gives them wiggle room, and you really don't want to give them wiggle room any chance you get. Okay, keep it tight.
Okay.
You're surgically hitting it with a scalpel, and the thing is you don't want to give them a big sandbox to play in. You keep it narrow and you keep it tight, and your job is to get in and out of there as quickly as possible.
Okay, so you're basically saying to tailor it to your facts and evidence, basically.
Right. It depends on your needs. Okay, you could put it in there if your needs require it, but many times your needs won't require it because you want to effectuate, getting somebody's rights protected and get in and get out quickly. You don't want to be bogged down in a, remember, these guys are word twisters, and they're great at expanding, debating about an argument of something. You're not in there to argue. You're stating the fact you did this, and I'm deserving of getting this remedy, because you can't assert a defense against it because you're already in fraud and violating the law. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And all they can do is to give you remedy, or they've engaged in further vexatious conduct that's actually more criminal activity. So you want to keep it just narrow.
Okay, I'll accept that answer. Thank you. I want to mention something to Phyllis.
Thank you, Ken.
Phyllis, I did not get a notice for the call this evening with the attached documents, and I understand
that. That happened to everybody.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, that happened to everybody by accident. Something happened where it didn't attach properly, so that we're working on correcting that, getting the documents out to everybody so they have a copy of it. So. That was a technical snafu. That wasn't Phyllis's fault. Somehow we had a technical glitch here. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome, Ken. Thank you. Okay. Is there anybody else?
Not at this moment. That's the last question. Oh, well, one just popped in.
Okay.
This is Scotty, New York. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Hi, Scotty.
I lost my screen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Scotty.
Oh, good. See, I'm here. Yeah, really good documents. I noticed right away that you could do it a petition instead of a motion. But a lot of things on there were saying you can't do this in the state, but yet they're doing it in the capital S state. It had a small S state, which is the Republic. So I saw that happening a lot in that one document. The first time I saw it was in the orange outline. It was document, the second document. Anyway, really powerful documents. But several times I saw where it's saying, like, a foreign country. A foreign country is every state with a capital S. And what it had was, so did you pick that up? Because I saw that happen a few times.
Well, you know, my rush to get the documents out to you, I didn't fully edit it as good as I could have.
No, okay.
I apologize there, because my goal was to get to, see, what I'm doing is I'm taking this stuff that I get in my research labs where I go research and find this, and I'm bringing it back out to you guys. You're on the front lines of this battle every day, and I want you to have the best tools to protect your rights, to stop the abuses, to stop the inland piracy against you. And sometimes, because of my lack of time, because I'm busy working on, I have many people I'm helping right now, I don't always have the time to do the fine-tune edit. Usually I have one or two other people that help me with fine-tune editing.
You mean you never have the time? You're so busy.
Yes. I'm hoping that I'll have some time more in the future, but that hasn't happened yet. You know, when you're out there, you know, we got a lot of alligators out there. We got a lot of alligators to deal with.
Well, if this stuff was easy, everybody would do it. But everybody's a thing. So one more question. A lot of this is saying for government agents that you're in your public right and your private capacity and this capacity. Well, what if it's something like this monopoly gas company, National Grid, or the contractor company that works with them that they hired? I can use some of these same documents against them, and I don't have to go as deep because they're not government, correct? They're still infringing on my rights and the.
You betcha they are. They know better.
I saw a lot of great stuff in those documents to be used many to pick, you know, to take the good stuff, you know, what applies. Okay. That's it. Well, one more thing.
I'm giving you tools to make your toolbox, and you're going to get more tools over the next several weeks. I have to drip feed them because some of them I'm in the process of applying them in different cases, and I'll get you feedback about how when I use them, how they're being responded to. And also, the goal is to become really highly effective to stop these people's trespass and violating people's rights, or if they've put somebody in jail, pulling them out of jail and getting them restored. I mean, there's a lot of work that's being done behind the scenes here. I don't get a chance to talk
very
much
about
it. Over
here too, brother. Over here too.
I know. Thank you for everything you're doing. Yeah. And we're going to make sure you have the best tools to do it with here. Over the next couple of weeks, you guys are going to have tools that nobody has. I want a promise from everybody that's out there. As I battle hard to get this stuff to you guys, please teach it to others so that way the more people that understand how to apply this and protect their rights, this tyranny will start to back off. Okay,
I did get the invite from Phil tonight with all those documents. So how come I got it and everybody else didn't?
I think it was a technical glitch. So mine came in. They came in without the documents, so that's why I brought it to Phyllis's and Daryl's attention. Because if it happened to me, it probably happened to others.
And one more thing,
because we send it out in batches of mailings. Go ahead.
Very, very important news that I just heard about 20 minutes before the show. Do you know who Chinawa Dowling is and the Jessica that works with him? I think they tried to poison him. He just went into hospital in a helicopter a few hours ago. Stomach, liver, heart problems. I believe that he must have got poisoned. Do you know who he is?
I don't know who he is, but I'll tell you what they need to do is they need to give him, which is very important, guys. If you ever deal with a poison, you need to have activated charcoal handy immediately. You take some of that, and it'll help purge the poison.
He was en route with a helicopter. Jessica is with him. And then I lost Max Miller yesterday morning. He died of something with his liver, too, or something. Very sad.
These people fight brutally.
technology. I yield. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scotty. I look forward to talking to you again, brother.
No, that was the last question, so you can
call. Okay, we could probably wrap it up. We're past the hour.
Okay. I hope I didn't go too long. I'm kind of chatty, so I apologize if I went too long.
Well, sorry about the glitch tonight. I guess they didn't want me to show these on the screen for some reason, but I had a lot of trouble with this computer.
That's all right. We got everybody anyway, so that's good.
But if there's anybody that did not get the documents in their attachment tonight, just send Phyllis an email. She'll give her email out here in a little bit, and we'll have to resend them to you. But if there's anybody new on the call that does not get the notices for the Tuesday or Thursday night calls and would like to receive the notices, you can send Phyllis an email. She'll give her email out here in a little bit. She'll want your first name, your state, and how you learned about the call. And if there's anybody that would want to reach out to you, they will send Phyllis an email, and she will forward it on to you. We do not share any of your contact information, but if anybody if anybody would want to reach out, just send Phyllis an email, and she'll forward it on to you, and it'll be up to you to respond to it at your convenience. So, Phyllis, you want to give out that email?
Yes, it's blueridge1121@gmail.com. blueridge1121@gmail.com.
Okay. Well,
can
Mike,
I say one thing before you finish up? Yeah. If you guys are getting good value out of this, I would love for you to pen an email and just give thanks to Phyllis and Daryl. They work tirelessly hard to help bring you the very, very best material to help you protect your rights and help push back against tyranny. So every chance you get, give them a good word in the email, because you know what? They deserve a good word. They work very tirelessly hard to make this the best it can be. So with that, Daryl, I yield.
Well, I want to thank everyone for coming on the call, because it's without you, we wouldn't be doing this. And what we want to do is to get enough tools in your hand to stop this here tyranny from being able to continue to run over people. But it has to be stopped. And so we're trying to get the best tools available into your hands so that it can be applied. And next Tuesday, we're going to have Ed from Georgia. He's going to talk about applying the Constitution in the state courts and that jurisdictional issue. It'll be a good call. Ed's very knowledgeable, and he's a great teacher. So, and we want to try to get this chair set up for the grand juries. And there's a grand jury qualification sheet. If you're interested in participating in a grand jury here in the future, just send that into fill it out and send it into Phyllis, and she'll put your name down at the as a candidate to participate, because it's going to be up to the people to exercise that our authority and hold these people accountable that are operating outside of their oath of office. So,
can I say a word, Daryl, about the grand juries? Listen, we do have power, guys. We're not powerless. And one of that power we have is to form common law grand juries when these people are public officials are operating ultra vires, whether it's a judge or whether it's a police officer, whether it's a public official, and they're violating the law, they're breaking the law against people. We have the right to bring our own grand jury together and get them indicted. That indictment can take them out of office so that they can no longer take a salary while they're violating people. And that's very important. We may not be able to put them in jail yet, but for right now, we could sure put the indictment in place to remove them from power. And that's why we need to form these grand juries, because if we're not doing that, then we're not exercising the powers that we do have available. More will become available as we get these grand juries moving and up and operational. But we shouldn't ignore that we have the power to at least get them, knock them out of those state or court offices or whatever. They're taking public money to abuse people. We have the right to be able to throw them out of office. Let's use that right. Let's not forget we have that power. Anyway, with that, I yield, Daryl.
Okay, this Thursday night there will not be a call. It's the first Thursday, and then next Tuesday we'll have Ed from Georgia. So with that, we want to thank everyone for coming on the call. We'd encourage you to share the website with the replays and all the other documents. And there's some current event videos down on the bottom in the attachments. Some very powerful information, very revealing. And so, and also underneath the agenda, there are several documents or videos and readable links that are very informative. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that. So with that, we'll just close with a word of prayer and thank God for the blessings that we have of the information that's been revealed, that we can build a resistance against these forces of darkness. So Heavenly Father, we come before you to thank you for this day and the information that was shared. We just thank you for the ability to share this with others over the air. We just pray that we can continue to enlighten others of the authority that they do have to stop this abuse of power that has encroached upon us. And we ask you, Lord, to deliver us from these forces of darkness and forgive us where we fail you, and just help us to work together in harmony and just prepare our hearts and minds for this battle, that we can stand firm in the face of the forces of darkness that come at us. And we thank you for all that you've given us, and we just ask you to continue to prepare the way before us and just guide and direct our steps, that what is said and done is according to your will and for your glory. And we commit all these things in the name of Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, and just let it be so. Amen.